Hello, my name is William Cueto, and welcome to Builders of Hope, a show about young Catholic professionals who are living out their faith in all aspects of their lives, their family lives, their social lives, and their careers. Growing in the spiritual life is not just for priests and nuns. It's for all of us, as you will see through the lives of our guests who are striving to live out their faith and build a better world. Mary McFadden is a 24-year-old high school teacher in Northern Virginia. As a teacher, Mary views her role as more than just teaching the subject matter. She sees it as having an opportunity and a responsibility to form her students as persons.
Things I like to do, I've made the greatest friends at Christian and college, and so I really enjoy hanging out with them, you know, going out with them on the weekends, or getting involved in different activities in the area where I live, which is right outside Washington, D.C., which there are so many things that you can do in the D.C. area as far as social life. Well, for example, last weekend, actually I had a great weekend. I went down to, happened to go down to see with my fiance because I'm engaged. I went down to see a Marine Corps exhibit. They have all sorts of free outdoor parades and things during the summer. Went down to that, and then Saturday I got to go down and go see some art galleries and then go out to dinner in Chinatown, and then that night I met my friends and went out to a concert. It was actually an Irish band that was in town. We went out to see them. So there's really a lot to do, and I like to get involved in a lot of social activities in the area, so I keep pretty busy as far as that goes.
That's great.
And I'm also involved in a lot of other things. For example, right now I'm involved in the Women's Council for the Diocese, and so with that, we hope to get more women involved in there, especially young women, involved in different activities that the diocese provides, maybe have some book clubs or different activities that people get involved in their parishes in the diocese. And
you've done some other apostolic activities, such as something you were telling me about earlier, working with the inner city kids.
Oh, that's right. Well, I am a teacher, and so for the past few summers, it's great. One of the great things I love about teaching is that you have a summer off and you can do all sorts of things. Whenever we come back to school,
nice.
The teachers like to talk about all their, all the things that they do. And so, for example, a couple summers ago, I was able to work at a program for inner city kids in Washington, D.C. And these are girls that want the extra help academically, but then we also offer them some guidance and about learning about the virtues. And while it's not a religious program, it's still an opportunity to teach them about the virtues and what's important in life and striving for goals and success. And these are girls who are from bad backgrounds, and they need that kind of support, and they need that kind of those kind of role models to stand up and say, you know, you can do it. You know, you get your education, and don't go the way that your friends are going. You know, don't end up unmarried with a child and or whatever it is. And so there's other things. Also, last summer, then I had the opportunity, because of my background in Ireland, I really wanted to go back. And I had the opportunity last summer to go back for 6 weeks and work for a similar program in the inner city in Dublin. And of course, there, I even felt a greater affiliation for the girls. These are 13, 14-year-old girls. And, you know, I had been their age in Dublin at that time, and at the same time, I've seen the pressures that they were going through, and yet to have an American girl now, since I'm an American girl, come back and talk to them, tell them that they need to go to college and strive to do well in school, I could really tell that they really appreciated that and appreciated the fact that I was there, and I was actually tutoring them in math at that time. But it was a wonderful experience, and I really felt like I was able to, just seeing them, their simpleness and their poverty, but at the same time, their openness to learning and to a role model. They don't have a role model. Yeah, they really don't. And their families aren't necessarily the greatest. And
that's very nice.
They don't have that kind of thing to look up to.
So you're a teacher by profession, but you've taken time in some of your apostolic works in Ireland, working with the inner city kids and some of these other things. They're another way of teaching too. I mean, you've taught them, so I see that in all different parts of your life, you're playing this role as a teacher. You obviously really like it.
It's true. I think I've always wanted to be a teacher, and then I went through times in my life when, being a teacher, especially in the States, is not as highly recognized, or it's not seen as, I mean, the saying, those who can do and those who can't teach, was always something that was echoed or in my mind. And then So I knew I was always good at math and science, and I was always a good student. And so I thought, well, you know, maybe God wants me to use these gifts. I could do something. I could be a doctor, you know, a great pro-life doctor. I could do something else. And so I saw these as, in a way, I had the idea that maybe I could be doing what God wanted me to do. But I also had the materialistic ideas creeping into my mind as well. And here's something prestigious. Here's something that, you know, I'm a good student, so I can get into this or that law school or that this or that medical school. It was just how I saw it. And then I realized it wasn't until I was a senior at Christendom, and I had planned, I'd been taking summer classes in science, I'd been planning to try and go to medical school, and my senior year, I had an experience where I was really searching. I said, Lord, what do you want me to do? And I really went back to that idea that I had always felt. I had been teaching CCD, you know, on the weekends in college, and I really loved teaching, and I realized, you know what, there's such a hunger out there. I'm seeing these young people, there's such a hunger to learn what's right, what's true, and there's such a need for good role models. And so I thought, you know what, I know I have gifts, but I know I can also use them in a different facet. It doesn't have to be in a prestigious way. And so I decided to teach, and of course the Lord found me a great job right when I got out of school, teaching at a girls' school, teaching math. And it was a wonderful opportunity, and I love it. And now I have the opportunity to teach religion.
In a high school.
I teach ninth grade religion, but I love the ninth graders. They're
did
great.
Did you pick religion as a subject, or was it just given to you?
Well, I originally had thought that maybe coming from Christendom with a philosophy degree and a theology minor, that's what I would teach. And actually my first job was teaching math. Like I said, that was kind of my strong subject. But then it was presented to me an opportunity to teach at this big Catholic high school in my diocese. And I'd always wanted to get involved in the diocese. And so I went ahead and took a position. And it's been a wonderful growing experience for me. It's a lot harder. Religion teachers have it a lot harder than a lot of other teachers. They really do. It's really an emotional attachment to it. There's some, you know, you're in it because you really are, this is so important to you, and you want to impress that on the students. And at the same time, you know, the kids don't take out their personal problems at home on their math teacher or on their science teacher. They take it out on their religion teacher because it's like, well, why is God doing this to me? You know, I don't accept what you're saying because I have this suffering in my life. I have this cross. And that was the biggest thing for me last year, was trying to explain, you know, why do some things happen to good people? Why did bad things so-called happen to good people?
Right.
And it was really, I saw the kids grow throughout the year in this understanding, to the point where they realized that, you know what, God doesn't send people to hell. People send themselves to hell when they are choosing to reject God and his love. For everybody, so by their actions, and I think they grew in some respect. That's one thing I feel like I tried to impress upon them, was their freedom and the fact that and God's infinite love for us, really.
So you see your profession as a way not just to teach them and mold them and educate them, which is so important and critical, especially at the youth level.
Mm-hmm.
You see it as a way to be a role model and help them out with things in their life. Which leads me to read something that I have here in the Church's Apostolic Exhortation of the Church in America. That's the title. And it says here, it reads, Catholic schools must seek not only to impart a quality education from the technical and professional standpoint, but also and above all, provide the integral formation of a human person. So it's going beyond just the teaching of the subject. You know, you get them educated in the math or the religion, but developing them at that critical age as a person. And that's what you're trying to do. Is that something that you're finding you're able to do with the students?
Well, of course, to a certain degree. You never know the impact that you can have. But at the same time, it's true. I mean, I think our Catholic school really tries to live that out. They really emphasize that it's not just the education in the subject, the sticker subject, encouraging the young people to get involved in activities. And especially we encourage them to get involved in service activities. Because, again, and at that age, they're so turned in, you tend to be so turned in on yourself and your problems. But then when you go down and see go to the pregnancy center or go to the maternity home or see the Abandoned Infants, which is a program that we have that they go down and help out at a maternity home. That's something that's going to last with them more than outside of the classroom, what you can teach them. And the same way, I feel like to stand up there as a witness, and, you know, especially talking about different, say, dating issues or chastity issues, and stand up there and say, look, I'm, you know, 23 years old, that's when I was 23, now I'm 24, nice. But stand up there and say, look, I've been through what you're going through right now. You know, and it's not like you're never going to get a date because you won't sleep with this or that person, which is somehow at times what they think at that age. They think, you know, they see the TV shows, these are their great models that they're following, and they see, well, that's just how it is when you're in your 20s. That's what people do. They just live together.
That's
just
the voice of their culture.
Exactly, and they're saying that's normal. That's what you do. And I like to stand up there and say, as an example, look, I mean, look at me. I'm not. Look, I have a boyfriend. I'm, you know, perfectly normal. I mean, I don't always say in those kind of words, but just to stand up there and be a witness. And I know, I mean, you hear little things back, but you see it can affect a few students. And if you only touch a few students and make them say, yes, you know what, I want to be like that. And, you know, I want that. Because that's what I tell them. You know, you're worth more than that. You're made in the image and likeness of God, and to give them that sense of value and the fact that that's what they're called to something higher, and to try and be a witness.
And that's
it's
important
very hard.
You're saying about being a witness, because you can't be an example if you don't live it yourself. Mm-hmm. And for instance, in the studies, you're a teacher to them. You were a valedictorian in your high school class and your graduating college class. So you've been there, and you can say that you've studied at that time. So you're an example, you know, beginning from an earlier age as to now you're a teacher, and you've chosen to be there for many good reasons to be with them. You have probably given up a lot of other things. And also in the other aspects of your life, for example, you're engaged to be married right now. And that's another place where you can show and be an example to them. Turning to that issue, you know, being engaged and preparing for marriage, that's an area where so many people have challenges, you know, at your age. Can you explain a little bit about the importance of preparing for marriage?
Well, it's definitely an eye-opener. And it's a wonderful thing to be engaged. I've been engaged now for just for a couple of months, but it's a wonderful time in my life, and I really enjoy it. But it definitely was an eye-opener once I started getting engaged, and how much different things you never thought about getting ready for getting married just get poured into your lap. I always thought, you know, it's going to be a wonderful time to prepare for this great sacrament that I'm going to be receiving. And there's so many different things you have to deal with, and you have to deal with getting your wedding reception place and booking a church and getting everything together, all of these, again, materialistic aspects. And that's something that you can definitely get bogged down on. And that's something that my fiancé, Stephen, and I have had to really talk about and discuss and say, you know what, this is getting between our relationship. What's really important, because we're getting so stressed out about this. Uh-huh. And that's something that we have to go back and focus on the sacraments. And so what we decided to do after everything that we read, set focus on it, said, look, to prepare for the sacrament of matrimony, what you should do is make sure you partake in the other sacraments, Eucharist and Penance especially. So what we started to do, we're already both going to Mass every day, or especially as much as we could, and going to confession regularly. But we made an effort to start praying together, and also trying to attend the same Masses together, even though it meant maybe get one of us getting up earlier or whatever it was to go. So we started doing that together as a couple.
How was that important to you?
Well, it really brought the focus back in our engagement, what it's all about, and how what we really want in our marriage and in our future family is to really have Jesus Christ as the center of our lives. We really want to have, you know, that to be the focus. So again, to have the Eucharist at the center of our relationship. So that was important that we were doing it together, and that we were praying together. I had a friend who, when I was telling her, we're going through all this stress, and it seems like there's so many things to deal with when you're getting engaged and getting married. And she said, Mary, what you need to do is you need to start praying together. And I thought, well, we do both pray, but we really need to do it together. So again,
and
we started saying,
pray together.
Stay together. That's right. And we started making the effort to do night prayer together. You know, make a time if we were seeing each other to say the rosary together. And because before, yeah, we did it, but it was a matter of sometimes it wasn't left to the last minute or of the night or it was definitely might not have been together. So it made a big difference.
You
to
said
pray
that
together.
You centered it in the Eucharist, and I just got back from Rome from World Youth Day, and the main central message from the Pope was for young people, center your lives around the Eucharist. Now you also mentioned going to the daily Mass. You know, why is it that you go to daily Mass? Why is that important to you versus going just on Sunday? You know, why has daily been become a practice in your life?
Well, it's true. It wasn't always a practice in my life, and it really wasn't until I embraced the faith of my own during while I was in college. And it was something that once I rationally thought about it, once I knew that who it is that we receive when we receive the Eucharist. I mean, when we go to Mass, that's Jesus. And when we receive Jesus' body, blood, soul, and divinity, when we receive the Holy Eucharist, that's greater than any gift that God could ever give us. I mean, that's the greatest gift that He can give us, sharing His divine life and His own Son in our soul. So, you know, the way I started looking at it was, you know what, can I really afford not to go to daily Mass? Here, I mean, think about it. If there was someone handing $100 bills every morning at 6:30, think about the line that would be out there. And so I started saying, well, if I'm not going to daily Mass every day, I mean, look how much I'm missing out on. And it really is really important to me. It's a really priority, no matter what goes on, that I try to my best of my ability to go to Mass. And it's great, actually. Another great thing about working at a Catholic school is we have the ability to go to Mass there. They have a convent, and I get to go every day pretty easily. So I know in some parts of the world, you know, people can't even get to Sunday Mass.
Sure.
And it's definitely a gift, and it's something that we so much take for granted.
Sure.
Especially in this country, but it's now really important.
Sure. Now, for some people, they would think that that's overwhelming, daily Mass. And that's something that I imagine you've worked up to. But they would also think that daily Mass is something that maybe, you know, thought of as something for priests or someone studying to become a nun. You know, how do you respond to that?
Well, I know that's something that my mom mentioned, that people used to say that when she used to go to Mass often, that she was probably going to be a nun. And people have implied that to me at different times in my life. But it doesn't necessarily, I mean, your vocation is something you're called to by God. But everybody, no matter what your vocation is, whether it's to married, single, or religious life, everybody is called to, everybody's called to holiness. And I mean, it just seems like, for me at least, maybe this is a selfish reason, but it's so great for me to go to daily Mass. It's that time when I reflect. I don't actually know what I would do if I didn't go. It's hard enough to live a Catholic life in the world today, let alone without the grace of the sacraments. I mean, the grace you receive from Eucharist is so amazing and so overwhelming and just so strengthening that I don't know how I get through. Like I said, my job is challenging, and I don't know how I get through the day with the kinds of questions and problems that are brought up to me through my students. I don't know how I could really give them something if I'm not receiving something from God myself through the grace of the sacraments. So it's true. Some people, you know what, their schedules, they can't do it. But if you have the time or you have the availability, it's something that is just, to me, it's just such a wonderful gift. That it's not a burden at all. It's almost something that...
It's a way of life.
Yeah, I guess so. It's a way of life.
And everything revolves around, for you, not only your faith, but it's centered on the Mass. And in particular, the Eucharist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it seems like that, what you've done, what you're trying to do, is following along the message of the Holy Father to do that. Now, you had mentioned earlier that you had gone to World Youth Day many years ago, that was a part of your formation. Can you speak to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's right. When I was in high school, I had the opportunity to go to Denver in 1993 when the Pope came there. And I mean, I'm a big fan of the Pope. I was before, because I had the privilege to have gone to Rome when I lived in Ireland. And but when I got to go as a junior, I was 17 years old, to go out to Denver, it was a great time with my friends and everything else. But at the same time, the heart of that trip was being there with the Pope in Cherry Creek Park at the vigil. And I've since talked to many people who've had the same experience. But to be there with, you know, over a million young people who are all enthusiastic, who are all, in some ways, I look at them and say, you know, they have more enthusiasm for this than I do. And I thought I came from a Catholic background. But to see that there's people from all over the world, all different backgrounds, you know, and they're all out there and in support. I just had that feeling of that we really belong to a universal church. It's not just me and my little group of friends or me and my school where they're doing this a certain way. This is the universal Catholic Church that was founded by Jesus Christ himself. And, you know, he said of Peter as the first pope, and it's gone down 2,000 years, and we are a part of this. And that's something I try and impart to my students. You know, I teach the Old Testament. And the idea that God has been preparing for the coming of his Son for 2,000 years, and then has been preparing us, each of us, for our coming, and then to give himself to us in the Eucharist for another 2,000 years, that it's just, we're part of a tremendous tradition, and it's just amazing.
That's a very profound thing to experience, seeing all these different cultures and different ethnic backgrounds come together and represent the church. Mm-hmm. That's a very strong thing. We've spoken a little bit about the combined spiritual life and a little about your individual spiritual life. What else has been a part of your formation that has been important to you?
Well, I think that besides going to Mass every day, and again, it wasn't something I've always done, but it's definitely something that has given great direction to my life and is very important right now. But definitely saying the rosary every day. Mary's promised so many blessings if we do that. And it's something I struggle with, trying to do it every day or getting distracted or whatever. It's something I struggle with. I try to go to a holy hour on Wednesday evenings at my parish. There's a holy hour, and that's a wonderful, it's always been a great break for me in the middle of the week, middle of the hectic week, to go in there and have in the evening, one evening a week around 7 o'clock, and have exposition and prayers and, you know, praying for the Blessed Sacrament. It's been wonderful to have a little talk. It just kind of focuses your day back or your week back onto what's important. And then what's great about that too is sometimes my friends go and then we can go out afterwards and, you know, get together, have a beer or something at the together. But to also provide that social aspect that's important to living out the faith. But besides that, you know, I usually try to go on a retreat at least once a year. I'm fortunate, besides that, getting to go with the kids as well as a teacher. And confession, I think frequent confession is an incredible gift and blessing that we have, being Catholic. I think that it's something, again, that you get in the habit of doing, and especially being engaged, I really try and go more often. Okay, I try and go every couple of weeks at least, and it's just such a wonderful gift. It's so much there's so much to be joyful about, because there's just, you know, to have that burden of your sins lifted and to know you can go to that fountain of mercy and be free from that, it's just really freeing and wonderful.
Well, it's been very nice to see how God has worked through your life in so many different ways. I'd like to thank you for coming, for being such a great example.
Well, thank you.
We'd like to thank you for joining us on Builders of Hope. If you'd like to contact today's guest or myself, email us at our website at buildersofhope.com. We invite you to join us next week when our guest will be Jeanette Stackhouse. She will explain that by pursuing the strongest of spiritual lives, it does not hinder one's married or professional life, but rather strengthens it.
Hello, my name is Father Fred Miller. I teach theology at St. Charles Borromeo Seminary in Philadelphia. Today on Faith Matters, we're going to discuss Mary, the Mother of God. I always say this, that whenever we call Mary Mother of God, we're making an act of faith, a profession of faith in Jesus Christ. Jesus is truly God, begotten of the Father in eternity, not created, begotten, God from God, light from light, true God from true God, one in being with the Father. And out of love for us and for our salvation, that eternal Son of the Father became a man in the womb of the Virgin Mary. So every time we call Mary the Mother of God, we're professing faith in the fact that her Son is truly a man. He takes from her She gives to him, I should say, everything that our mothers give to us. Jesus is like us in everything but sin. However, he's not a human person. He's a divine person. He's the divine person of the Word. And Mary really conceived, gave human life to, gave birth to, nursed, and raised God himself, made man. And so, my brothers and sisters, I'd encourage you, whenever you talk about Mary of Nazareth, the mother of Jesus, call her by the title which is her most glorious title of all. Call Mary the Mother of God.